It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. We're doing our series on the 1983 team. Very excited to be doing this series. And with us right now, of course, we have Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, man?
What's going on, David?
Very excited to have these guys on and to celebrate them and their tremendous team and their achievements. And we also have Bubba Rosenbaum. What's up, dude?
What's going on, guys? It's great to be talking some more Pirate football memories.
No doubt. And Bubba, I know you've been working hard, and I know I've talked to Chuck, and then you've talked to Chuck and many other players, but coordinator, tell everybody, introduce our great guest.
Yeah, we kicked off this 83 roundtable a couple of nights ago, volume one. We talked to Kevin Walker, Clint Harris, and Chuck Bishop. Tonight, we're continuing on with the defensive theme, but we're talking about the defensive front. We're going to be joined by Jerry Rogers, Chuck Northcutt, and Mike Grant. Guys, welcome to the Sports Objective Podcast.
Welcome, guys.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
I'll tell you what, those DBs the other night put over that defensive front big time. They were talking some good things about how good the front seven was there.
Well, they should.
I second that, Chuck.
Yeah. You when you put pressure on the quarterback, you throw a lot of interceptions, a lot of turnovers. So if you look back at that year through some of the highlight films, you'll see the turnovers, and a lot of that's by pressure on the quarterback.
Well, I guess whatever position you play, then obviously that's that person that played that position is going to say they're the best, or that position's the best, right?
Well, yeah, but those defensive backs were pretty darn special. I mean, yeah. You know, you had Clint Harris. I think they said he ran a 4.4. As I remember, he ran a 4.3 when 4.3s weren't run. And those guys were pretty special.
And Jerry, yeah, well, and just to tag onto that, I mean, those two corners we had were freshmen.
Yeah. Now that was
Calvin Adams. Those guys are freshmen.
Yeah. How many Adams brothers did we have on that?
12,
team,
at least 12.
Yeah, there was a bunch of them. But no, the defensive backs were just. I mean, we had a great bunch of linemen and linebackers, and but no, there was a lot of talent on that team. There really was. Those defensive backs were stellar, though.
Yeah, a lot of interceptions that year. I don't know how many, but I know Clint had three in one game against Florida. Should have had four, but one was nullified because of a really stupid call of interference away from.
That's a whole other story there, man.
That's a whole other story.
Yes, sir.
That's one of the three plays that kept us from being national champs, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, I wanted to ask you guys about that, about the very fact of being so close to being the difference between a few plays being from going from 8-3 to 11-0. Why? What in the world? Like, do you think it's because of the fact that what you had on the front of the jersey being East Carolina and not a quote, I'm using that loosely, brand name team like a Florida, Florida State, Miami, who I think went on to win the national championship that year?
I will tell you, from I transferred in, and when my freshman year, I played at Maryland. We had a team that. It was a good team. We ended up in the top 20. And now East Carolina was so much better. I mean, I think the thing that really hurt us was from 82, we lost a couple coaches that got, you know, they moved on to other positions and whatnot. But if we were an established program, without a doubt, the talent we had there was that was a national championship caliber team, in my opinion.
Well, no doubt.
Jerry Rogers, I agree with you 100%. there were three games that were basically decided on three plays and three calls by three officials down in Florida. If there was, in my opinion, and this is just Chuck's opinion, if there was instant replay back then, they would have had a hard time validating their calls. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, it's kind of piggybacking off the transfer theme, we'll work in reverse a little bit and then get back to some of the favorite memories and top games and things of that nature. But, Jerry, you're talking about transferring in, and Chuck, we were talking earlier off the air, you said you transferred in from NC State, and, of course, Mike, you transferred in from Chawan, which is now in the Division II ranks. Back then it was a junior college.
Yes, sir.
And, of course, we've had several players transfer in from Chawan back in those days, like George Koontz. But talk a little bit about that and then each of your paths to ECU. We'll start off with Jerry.
Well, mine was a roundabout sort of way to East Carolina. I was at Maryland. Played there for 2 years under Jerry Claiborne. And like I say, my freshman year, I think we were 7-8-0, something like that. We ended up like 9-8-3 or so. And we ended up like 17th in the country. And I'll tell you that team was nowhere near what we had at East Carolina. I went from Maryland, I went to Villanova, and if you remember 1981, Villanova dropped their program. And then we were allowed to leave Villanova, and then, you know, I got recruited by East Carolina, and I actually loved the place. I came there with Kevin.
Kevin Ingram.
Yeah, the quarterback.
Milt Corsi.
And Chuck Bushback, Milt Corsi. We all came from Villanova. And, boy, East Carolina was just such a great place. And we came in there, and the talent was tremendous. And like I say, in 82, we had a nice year. I think it was 7-4, but then we lost our offensive coordinator, and we had a bunch of new coaches. You know, you had the same defense that opened up with Florida State, giving them 47 points, and then that same defense holds the eventual national champ to 12 points, which 7 of them came in the last minute and 47 seconds. But now, had we had a stable coaching staff at that time, now, without a doubt, that team would have been a national championship by far.
All right, now let's move on. Chuck, tell us about your path to ECU.
Well, I don't want to admit to it, but I went to NC State originally. Bo Ryan was a coach, and Monty Kiffin came in on his white horse, and I said, this is not for me. And my high school coach, Hal Stewart, who was in Garner at that time, had been in Richmond County, contacted Bob Sanders and said, you know, look, you know, give Chuck a chance. And they brought me in, and, you know, thankfully, you know, I got, you know, a nice welcome by the team. I had one guy that I had played high school football with, Chuck Bishop, but then, you know, I just kind of meshed with the other folks that came in. So it was just a great great situation for me, and it was nothing better than to beat NC State our senior year to top that off.
And last, but certainly not least, Mike, talk a little bit about how you ended up in Greenville and talk about your path to Chewan and then who all you were recruited by out of Chewan.
Yeah, well, my path to Chewan, Chewan University, Chewan Junior College at that time, was what we call a stepping stone for a lot of great players. My freshman year, we had Jody Schultz, Amos Twitty, myself. We had some players that were, matter of fact, my freshman year, we had the number one junior college defense in the country. Coach Garrison, what a coach. He had a story for every incident that would happen on the football field or off a football field. That was his motivation. His motivation was that, and Ed Emery's motivation was you either do it or you sit down.
Oh yeah, my way or the highway. Or,
that's it.
My way or the trailways.
That's it. But coming to you, I had offers at Pittsburgh, University of Pittsburgh, and East Carolina and Virginia Tech. But my visit. My roommate was Kenny Phillips. Kenny Phillips was. He lived in outside of Greenville, so we'd come down to Greenville to party on the, during the off season. So that's one of the reasons what got me hooked at East Carolina. And back in those days when they said party school, East Carolina was ranked in the top three.
That was certainly a fringe benefit, but we have to.
Oh yeah,
We have to give our praise to Kenny Phillips, who's one of our senior teammates who has since passed away but had a great coaching career. And I think he ended up in the Fayetteville State Hall of Fame. We just love Kenny. I remember going to his funeral. It's just tough when you have some of your Pirate brothers pass away. And Kenny's one of them, and that's not the only one from that 1983 senior class, but those are tough situations.
Yeah, I think Kenny is still, last I visited East Carolina was this year, he is still, he's got still some of the lifts. I know the squat for a defensive back. Squatted 650, 670 pounds as a defensive back. He has still some of the strongest squats of any East Carolina Pirate ever to this day. Yeah, very, very strong guy.
Yeah, he was a stud. Matter of fact, I chuckled the other day when I took a look at the pictures we took in Myrtle Beach in 1982 spring break. And Kenny was up front, had those shorts on, and built like Zeus or somebody, man.
Yeah, That's funny.
But then coming to East Carolina, man, it's like that was family. We came from a junior college, like I said, Jody Schultz, myself, Kenny, Amos Torty. We were kind of we're feeling the East Carolina players out, coaches out, and they were feeling us out. You know, we're from a junior college. Ed didn't. That was the first time we kind of recruited heavily from a junior college because we got some other guys from some other junior colleges as well. But I think once we put the pads on us in that spring, I think he realized that he made the right decision. And the team kind of took on to us and kind of we became a family. And we're still that family today. That team was – that's probably the greatest team I've ever been associated with, hands down. If I start a sentence, Chuck or Jerry probably could finish it. That's how tight we were.
You talk about becoming a family and you guys having so many transfers coming from, Maryland, NC State, Chowan, other junior colleges, all the guys from Nova when they shut down their program, all coming together and then with the guys who were recruited by East Carolina out of high school. Sometimes you hear, recent history at East Carolina, transfers coming in and not meshing with the current team. How did the coaching staff, how did Ed Emery and his coaches manage guys coming in from so many different programs and transferring in and making them a part of the team and the family of the players that were already here?
you know, my opinion of that is I don't think they cared one bit. Ed's prescription for everything was the grind. Like, you just, we're going to do 4 days, spring camp. We did, at the end of every spring ball practice in 82, we did 10 hundredths, 880s, 660s, and 440s. And I remember one time Terry Long, who ended up being a potential All-American, he, like, didn't want to do them, and they just didn't care. It's like, no, you're going to do them. And he worked you harder than you would ever imagine yourself working. And I believe that hard work is what brought us together. His work ethic brought us together.
Yeah.
So basically everybody just getting out there together and everybody having to do the same hard work, everybody's doing it, kind of united you.
Yeah, Ed had a system. He had a system. That was his system. You could tell he did his homework. That was his system. Like Jerry was saying, Terry Long was, I mean, All-American, first-round draft pick. And Ed told him, we sat out there and watched Terry. We all pushed him along. Said, look, you either do it or you go pack your stuff.
Yeah, there was no I'll tell you how special that psychology was. In 82, Jody Schultz, who was with Mike, you know, down from Chowan, I had gone on vacation with Jody and his family, and he told me, I shared this with Chuck, I think a week or two ago, where Jody was drafted, I believe, in the second round.
Seventh pick in the second round in Philadelphia.
You know what, Mike?
Yesterday.
Yeah, you guys were you and Amos and those guys, you guys are all hooting hot. Well, Jody actually told me that he begged Ed to get him, because I guess he could play a whole lot.
Yeah, Richard, he
wanted to play on the 83 team.
Because he knew he knew it was special.
Yeah. And Ed told him. Now, Ed took a top, you know, NFL draft choice and said, no, you're going to go to the NFL and make money. But Jody wanted to stay for the 83 team because he knew how special that team was. You know, and he, it's like signing up for a prison camp, really, you know, but you just loved it because Ed got more out of you than you would ever get out of yourself.
And here's something from Chuck, a story that I never knew that Jerry Rogers just told about Jody Schultz. But, you know, it does not surprise me. Someone who, you know, who might have had a chance from a, what was it, Jerry? Maybe an injury year or something like that, who had another year of eligibility, got drafted second round but wanted to stay to be on that 83 team.
Yeah,
that's incredible, particularly considering now, you got guys, you know, that won't even play in their bowl game because they want to make sure they get drafted.
Oh, yeah. And now they have, you know, limits on how much they practice. And, you know, and like I say, when I came into East Carolina, Maryland, we had Jerry Claiborne, and he was a very, very hard coach. And the things that Ed was a great guy. He loved you, but he was hard on you. I remember at times you hated him.
Yeah, he really did. Good coach, right?
Well, no, I remember in 3 days, in the 82 year, I'd broken both my hands, and he just called me out because I couldn't do up downs, and I'm like, "Are you kidding me? I can't," you know. And he just like he embarrassed me in front. And at that moment, I hated him.
Yeah, but, your fingers were going in all different directions.
But I
remember you and I going to the hospital together because I dislocated my knee.
Yeah, but Jerry, that was doing the two gap technique with Bob Sanders. He got that new. But we were all the linebackers sitting there arguing about who's going to wipe your butt, man, when it's time to get to the bathroom.
Do you remember that? Tom Corns, who is a very great offensive tackle for us, and he was my roommate my freshman year, and I remember, or my freshman year, but my 15th year, I guess it was, but my first year in East Carolina. Tom was my roommate when I broke both my hands in 82, and Coach Emery, he stands up in front of the team and he says, and I'm gonna nominate Tom Corns for roommate of the year, you know. And Tom's like, what, you know? And Coach, and we call him E Squared, Ed Emery, we call him E Squared. So E Squared, he says, well, Jerry Rogers got both hands broken. I know he ain't wiping his own butt, you know.
Now, how did you manage to break both your hands?
Oh, geez, we were opening up with NC State, and they ran an ISO. Remember this, Mike? They ran the ISO drill, and they ran a power sweep.
Right.
So we were doing we would run an outside drill where we'd run against their power sweep. This is the last week of summer camp, and they ran a power sweep left. And, you know, went in on the tackle, and then one of the defensive ends or somebody came up and hit my right hand, and it swelled up, and they put a soft cast on it, and I kept playing. And then we were doing the inside drill with the ISO, and then I busted my left-handed up in that drill. And then the next day, that was a Wednesday, Thursday, they said, well, you know what? Go get your left hand x-rayed. As long as you're getting left hand, now go get your right hand x-rayed too. And it ended up, they were both just broken. And, that sort of ruined my...
Hey, Jerry, this is Chuck. Was that when we shared that, rickety, van to the hospital?
Actually, it was the van ride back from the hospital is when Chuck and I bonded, because I found out that both my hands were broken, and the doctor told me I was done for 5 weeks, and Chuck had his knee, did you have it operated on? You had it in?
Yeah, dislocated.
But it was a mess, and he's laying on the van floor, and we're going from the... We're going from the hospital because the trainers wanted to wrap up his leg at East Carolina. So he had his leg unwrapped, laid on the floor. And I'm looking at this guy, you know, and I'm like, hey, Chuck, how you doing? He's laying on the floor. And Chuck's like, he's saying to the driver, hey, can you go easy over the bumps? And Gringo has... had a lot of railroad tracks. That driver hit every railroad track. And Chuck's like, dang it, can you stop hitting the dang railroad track? You know, because every time he hit the railroad tracks, he would be screaming.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was a funny trip.
Guys, talking about another part of the bonding experience, and you talk about the difficult practices and how Coach Emery and staff were, we've heard so much about the old roller rink or ice skating rink, tobacco barn, whatever you want to call it, where that was the home to your weight room under Mike Gentry. Talk a little bit about that and what it was like. Everybody knows what it's like in Eastern North Carolina on a summer day, you know, in the mid to upper 90s. I can only imagine how hot it was in that place.
Well, Chuck, let me talk about Coach Gentry, and you guys can touch bases on the tobacco barn and the skating rink.
I remember the tobacco barn in 81 because that's when I came in.
But
the weight room was, hey we thought we were...
Let's talk about Gentry first. Let's talk about Gentry first before we get into that.
Definitely.
I tell you what, we talk about our coaches, but I tell you what, Mike Gentry probably was one of the greatest influence, I know, to me. And I'm sure these guys will testify. I mean, Mike Gentry is probably one of the greatest adversaries, you know, on earth. I mean, he says, look, The only way you're going to be, so Grant, you're good, but if you want to be great, you got to put some weight on, and we got to get you strong in the upper body. He said, trust me, if you listen to me, you play more than college ball. You go on to play, you go on to play some more football when you leave here. And
Mike,
he was a nice guy.
Mike, you are so spot on. I actually reached out to Coach Gentry. You know, he was an assistant athletic director at Virginia Tech. And I had coached up here in Pennsylvania with the youth football, and then I would help with the wrestling. And Mike, anytime I called him, the first time I called him, you know, he wrote a 404-page book called A Chance to Win.
Yeah.
And it is a book that is 404 pages on lifting weights for football. And, you know, he was just tremendous. And when I called him to help the wrestling team up here, he put me, you know, with the strength coach of the Virginia Tech wrestling team. But now he took, I guess his history is he was a high school coach that realized how bad weightlifting was for football players, and then he went back and studied kinesiology and got to be a Hall of Fame strength coach.
Yeah,
and
we just I'm just saying, Jerry, we just didn't know what we had there.
Mike Gentry was a gem, and I think Coach Connors would attest to that. And you know, I sent Mike a picture of our 83 seniors with a note on the back, and he said, "I'll never forget that team and what we accomplished."
And in 1983, we had the strongest football team in the country, and Sports Illustrated wouldn't put that in their magazine. They put the 82 season. I think we played the Tar Heels. And they put Kevin Bryant on the front page where he rushed for about 300 yards against us. But in 83, when we came out, they came and visited us in the weight room. And all those guys, their eyes just lit up. Like, oh, my God, we all came in there and worked out with no shirt on. We knew Sports Illustrated was there. And Terry Long just blew them away. We had the strongest team in the country that year and the fastest team in the country that year.
Yeah, Mike, you're spot on with that. And that was Coach Gentry made lifting a science. He took he married the work ethic of Coach Emery and science, he was top notch.
Yeah, no doubt.
And I think Coach Connors, and I'll give him props, was very similar to Mike Gentry in his approach.
What do you think, guys? What do you think now about the new strength and conditioning coach John Williams, who actually is a native of Greenville, went to J.H. Rose back in the day. He's been with Coach Houston, and he gets to come back home. And my understanding is, I haven't had a chance to meet him, the guys, we haven't yet, but my understanding is he's a really good strength and conditioning coach.
Well, the coach might be great. You know, my thing is, the hell with the coach. Just look at where they got to work out at. Man, if we had that in 83, I guarantee you we'd be national champs.
Yeah.
I mean, hands down. I mean, I would promise you that.
We worked out the
bingo
hall.
You know,
I stayed the
we would be flipping tires.
They're doing a great job at ECU. I mean, that's every time I go in there, I get goosebumps. I get chills.
Yeah, they've got nice facilities there, and I'm sure
that's awesome.
Coach Houston.
Yeah, they'll take advantage.
Has a great strength coach, and I think I speak for a lot of former Pirate Letter winners that we're going into this new season with a lot more optimism than we had in the last couple seasons. And that might be an understatement, but I firmly believe we're got the ship pointed in the right direction now. My opinion.
Well, I agree with you 100%, Chuck. 100%.
Yeah,
go ahead, Chuck. I mean, Cal.
Yeah, I don't. We told the guys the other night this, and I don't know if you guys, any of you had a chance to listen to our podcast we did for the 78 Independence Bowl team. It was a little podcast party we had to celebrate their 40th anniversary, and Mike Houston surprised everybody and stopped in and addressed the members of the 78 team, and wanted to make those guys, and I'm sure it would extend to you guys too, that, you know, he said all former players, all Pirates are welcome, you know, in the weight room, on the sideline, at practice. He wants the former players to be a part of this.
Yeah, I think that's nice. You know, to have continuity in a program, you got to bring the history in, and I think that's a special, very, very meaningful sentiment.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I have to think, I have to thank the sports objective group. I mean, a lot of folks, you know, you talk about the voice, Charles, they all came a little bit after 83. So we're a little bit lost in the shuffle. But if you really go back and study it and you watch some of those YouTube 1983 rewind, I guess they have four episodes, and they use that for a recruiting video for 1984. And you see the highlights of us against Florida State, Florida, and Miami, all of them top six teams when we played them. You know, that was something special there. I mean, you know, it's and I'm glad you guys are trying to, you know, make sure we're not forgotten in the whole conversation.
Well, guys, one thing that I can mention, too, is that's amazing to me is doing this project, being the podcast, is that we found that a lot of the guys said, oh, why do you want to, you know, there were some guys who were like, why do you want to even talk to us? We're like, they were, felt like they were treated, not by us, but at the university as has-beens, you know, that nobody would care about hearing their story and hearing what they had to say. And I think one of the things that I'm proud of is not about us, it's about that very thing. We have a lot to be proud of, and I think that it's been documented by even people inside the Ward building, so to speak, that the previous administration, meaning the athletic department, especially our former athletic director, they didn't want to have anything to do with history, and which was a shame. And so it's good to have our new administration and to have a new coach who he wants the history to be there, because how can you get anywhere if you don't know where you've been?
Hey, that's what I was about to say, the same thing. You hit the nail on the head. And like Chuck said, man, we appreciate you guys. And when I see you guys personally, I'll thank you personally. We appreciate your effort.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, we're just trying to do the – you know, my parents said many years ago, if you do the right thing, you'll be blessed. And that's what we're trying to do, is do the right thing. And it literally was a year ago that I had the idea for the nostalgia party to have a football reunion, because of all the bad things that were still happening and the previous athletic director, and there was all the, I mean, fans are divided. I mean, it was just, and Kyle's mentioned, the media is divided. Everything was divided. And it's just one of those things where I started thinking about, we've got so much, and I told Kyle and Bubba, we've got so much to be proud of. And this team, the 83 team, is a team that is to be celebrated many years. And I really believe that by celebrating you guys, the guys that are on the team now will see, they can see that it is possible. That's the whole point. It is possible to beat these teams and to compete with the best teams, the quote-unquote, again, brand-name teams in the United States.
Yeah, let me, and this is Chuck, I will give you some facts here. In 1983 final AP poll, of course, we ended up 20th. The only top 20 team that did not get a bowl bid. And the teams that finished under us that received votes were Tennessee, Penn State, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, Florida State. You know, we had them the first game. They had 46 points at the end of the season. We had 127 for our 23. Virginia Tech, Maryland, Notre Dame, Washington, Washington State, Missouri, whom we beat, North Carolina, whom I wish we had played in the Peach Bowl. That would have been, you know.
Oh, my God.
If they wanted to make a bunch of money, they would have had that as a bowl game.
Oh, my
and,
God.
And Arizona. And then you have from our 1983 senior squad during the 1984 draft, second round, 55th pick, Steve Hamilton, defensive end, fourth round, 111th pick, Terry Long, guard, fifth round, 115th pick, Clint Harris, defensive back, fifth round, 125th pick, Jeff Begees, linebacker, outside linebacker, fifth round, 133rd pick, Los Angeles Rams, Hal Stevens, defensive end, 10th round at 253 pick, Norwood Van, tight end, 10th round, the 280th pick of the draft, Ernest Biner, running back, and we know how he did, and then we had on the 11th round, the 284th pick of the draft, John Robertson, Philadelphia Eagles with a tackle, and we had Kevin Ingram go to the CFL. Jerry, you know, had some time in the CFL, and our teammate here is on today, Mike Grant, went to the USFL with the Memphis Showboats.
And Mike, you played. But Ed was down at the Memphis Showboats, no?
Yeah, Ed came my second year there. Ed came as running back coach and special teams coach.
Yeah.
And I got a few stories about that deal.
But you do.
Well, what I'm saying, you know, is Kyle's a statistics guy. Those are facts. And
Bubba's
that,
the stat guy.
That is freaking awesome.
Bubba's the stats guy.
And Bubba, Kyle's a
just the facts, ma'am.
Kyle's the off the cuff guy.
He's the Joe Pryor.
He's a stir the pot guy.
That's me.
I've read some of his posts, yeah. But I mean, really,
eight guys drafted
from one senior class. I'm not trying to pump us up. And believe me, all I did for ECU is just try to, you know, as Coach Emery said, Chuck, be a coach on the field, give everything you got, be a coach in the locker room, help our guys out academically. So, you know, you have different people that play different roles, and thankfully, after my 82 season that I had a serious knee injury, I didn't think I'd be able to get back, but I was able to come back and did see some action in some of those games. So I always thank Coach Emery for that because I know he knew where my heart was.
Chuck, you were talking about coming off that injury and bouncing back. That's what, in the spring of 83, you received the Courageous Player Award. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was going to mention that. You're right. That's correct.
Right, Michael. Because 82, I came in and I was positioned to be able to move up in playing time. We lost a lot of linebackers. We lost Mike that year. And a bunch of others. I mean, I can't imagine at 82 if we had everyone at full strength. But what I love is the players accepted me. I was a walk-on, and I don't have any embarrassment about that. But I was taken care of after that injury my junior year. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, Mike, as far as these guys are 7-8 years younger than I am, at least. I'm talking about the podcast. I'm the senior member of the podcast. as far as age is concerned. And I was telling them about the how great the USFL was until they tried to compete with the NFL. Can you talk a little bit about your USFL experience? Because I was telling them that I really thought the USFL was a great league, and it was actually a chance for those of us who love pro football. It was a chance for us to the pro football, the quality of the teams, the coaches, the mascots, everything was great about the USFL, in my opinion. The talent was tremendous.
You're right. The USFL was whoever came up with the plan had a great plan, and it did give people like myself an opportunity. The Cowboys had me in their camp. They had me in, like Chuck said, I hurt my knee in 82, and it never got better. And the Cowboys got me in the camp. That's when D.D. Lewis was just retired, so they didn't have a middle linebacker at all. When I went into the camp, they had me number one on the depth chart. Well, so I couldn't even pass the physical because of my knee, because of knee surgery I had. That's when I tell everybody this story. Remember Mean Gene, the hitting machine? Eugene Lockhart?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He came from Baylor. And he was signed. Dallas signed him as a free agent when I couldn't sign. Tom Landry is the one that sent me to the USFL, to Memphis. He said, look, son, if you go to Memphis, you get that knee right, and you play, we'll bring you back after the first season. Knee never got better. I hobbled around with Memphis for 2 years. But Eugene Lockhart took that spot, was rookie of the year, defensive rookie of the year, won 2 Super Bowls.
Wow. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Well, there's so many, you know, there's so many stories here that people really don't even know. And I do some of that with Mike, but I didn't know that whole story. That's just,
yeah.
You know, that just goes to show what kind of character players we had back then.
I have a question for you guys, too, that may be probably the raciest question, but as far as the partying goes and the I know earlier we were talking about the number 3 party school. What about as far as the co-eds and the ladies? Were they as beautiful then as they are still even now in 2019?
Was this a trick question?
No, it's not. No.
Oh, what? We did the partying, but during the season, our partying was done in the dorm. Like I said, we were a family. We did everything as a family. There were some guys that Coach Emery pulled aside and said, look, we'll keep an eye on so-and-so tonight, okay? Don't let them get in trouble, you know. But we had a good time. But our good time was around one another. And the co-eds, like I said, I'll let those guys talk about that because my wife's listening. So.
Oh, yeah. Hey, that's very good, Mike.
My wife is actually an East Carolina girl, and Cindy and I started in 1983 dating, and we just had our 30th anniversary, and took me 5 years to marry or whatever. But yeah, now Mike, you're right on the money. We did party, but most of it was within bounds.
Yeah.
Man.
Well, I guess you couldn't see, but you had to make sure that you were in shape. You had to make sure you're going to class. I mean, it's amazing. I don't think people realize, and I wasn't a player, but I have an idea. As far as academic, I don't know. Obviously, I didn't play with you guys as far as the football piece of it. But the going to class part is a big part of it. And you can't do all that and still expect to make good grades. And then obviously as far as your health is concerned, that's got to be a priority too, right?
Yeah, the academics were, you know, that's one of the areas that Coach Emery said, make sure these guys are, you know, and I help tutor and this, that, and the other. And, you know, at the end of our senior year, actually, a gentleman that's on the podcast tonight with us, Jerry Rogers, and I were the Academic Achievement Award winners for 1983.
And Chuck has never let me forget that. Chuck was 10 times the student I was.
And there has to be a tiebreaker here. I mean, Jerry, what was your major?
My major was therapeutic psychotics.
Jerry's major was private ed, and my major was the business administration. And I said, come on, they've got to be.
There's got to be
a tiebreaker here. Why do you have both of us? Jerry has built a tremendous business. He's got to be one of the most successful teammates I've had. His business, Unlimited Restorations. Incorporated.
You are killing me, man.
You're the multi-millionaire in this.
So Chuck was the genius in our class, and I came in and I trained at Villanova. I was in electronic radio and television communication, and I liked that, you know, radio and television speech and all that. And then East Carolina, when they recruited me out of Villanova, they were in the process, and that's with heavy quotation marks, of getting a communication degree. And at the time it was under the drama department. It was a communication minor. So I said, okay, they're getting their degree. I'll go to East Carolina and I'll get my communication degree.
I'm starting to yawn now, man.
thank you, Chuck. This is why you tied and you didn't win. You got to stay focused. So it ended up where I'm still waiting for them to get their communication degree. and I started having to take acting classes, production classes. So I went up to my academic advisor. I'm like, what can I get out of here as quick as I can? It was transportation safety and driver's education. So I said, I'm in. I just want to get my degree. And lo and behold, I ended up. And I don't know, Chuck, how you got it, but I earned my end of it. I got the what was it, Chuck? The award, the academic whatever. I was on the deep list.
I think you sound like you'd be a good applicant for David, Kyle, and Bubba.
Hey, Chuck, correct me if I'm wrong, Chuck, but didn't you have a business going on while you were at ECU?
Hey, I'm not going to talk about that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're making money. I think I borrowed a couple of dollars from you here and there.
Well, no, I was a tutor, you know. Yeah. Coach Emery had me tutoring the guys.
Hell, you didn't tutor me. It took me 25 years.
Well, I didn't need to tutor you.
Hey,
some of the other guys. They wouldn't have graduated. Oh, Lord. You know, now we're getting kind of, but that was the way it was.
K.K. Walker mentioned the other night was that we talked about you guys not getting a bowl game. And he said that there was that you guys thought you were going to the Independence Bowl. Basically, you thought the invitation had.
They had already told us. We were playing Southern Miss that Friday night when they had us all. Of course, we played Southern Miss that Saturday at Southern Miss. It's Friday night, but Ed told us if we win, he's got a call from the Independence Bowl. We beat Southern Miss. We're headed to the Independence Bowl.
Yeah, that's correct.
And then there was, I know on TV they had something, you know, and it's hard to remember back then. It was Ole Miss or Mississippi State had some game that went down to the last play, and due to who won, you know, we were knocked out. But none of those teams were in the top 20.
Well, hell yeah, teams that were, what, 5-5-1 or?
Well, you know.
Notre Dame was, what, 6-5?
North Carolina was 6-5 that year, and I think Notre Dame was 5-6. That was actually the year they put in that you have to have at least a winning record to get a bowl bid. It's because Notre Dame took that bid, and they were 5-6, but they had the fan base, and at the time, East Carolina did not. You know that.
That kind of is a pain that I wish that team could have had the experience of a bowl game. They certainly deserved it, and
if you listen to Coach Emery, man, he took that to his grave. He was so distraught, man. He said, "The only thing I regret, man, is we didn't go to a bowl game."
Well, you know what? I tell you, my bowl experience was in 78 at Maryland. We went to the Sun Bowl and played Texas. And my brother Mike was playing at University of Cincinnati. And I said, you know, Cincinnati will never go to a bowl. So we went to the Sun Bowl, and we got crushed by Texas, 42-0. I gave my brother Mike the watch I got from the bowl because I thought I'll be going to 3 more bowls, right? So I give him the watch. And then at insult to injury, he tells people I played for Texas after we got crushed by So that was my only close on. I was hoping to tell we would go to this bowl so I could regain my pride.
Wow.
Guys, another memory that something that we've heard about down through the years was that 1983 game out at Missouri. I think it was the previous season we had lost to those guys, and then whatever hotel we were staying at that year, the staff had on buttons that said, "Where in the hell is East
Carolina?"
And then, so talk a little bit about that, and then I know after the game, Coach Emery said, "I guess they know where in the hell East Carolina is now."
Well, I can speak on that. '82, I was redshirted that year because I had knee surgery. Those guys, we'd always wait for those guys, no matter what time they came back from. I guess you flew into Raleigh, then you busted back to Greenville, and we'd wait on the front stoops of the athletic belt dorm, and those guys came back. A lot of those guys had buttons. And they said, "Well, Coach Emery took a handful of them," and I said, "What the hell is East Carolina?" And I think the first guy I told us, "Well, they'll know next year. We'll show them next year." And like I said, in 83, after that win, Coach Emery said he gave that button. He put it on the head coach's lapel, and he says, "I bet you know where the hell East Carolina is at now."
you never want to give another team extra motivation that was a big game in 83.
That was our last game of the year, right?
No, that was early on.
The Missouri game, that was, let's see, game 4, I believe, because you had the 47-46 loss at Florida State, then you had the state win, Murray State.
No, I'm sorry, I'm thinking of Southern Miss.
Yeah, Southern Miss and the Hurricane.
I think it was the last game of the year,
Hurricane, we played in a hurricane.
That was, you remember half the lights went out?
Half of the lights went out. That's it. Yeah.
And we kept right on playing.
That was a great
football game. That was a great
football game. Hell, we lightning
loose lips.
We bought off the damn plane on the flight back.
Lightning hit the stadium, and half every second light grid went out in the stadium. We kept right on playing.
It's a different world nowadays, obviously.
Yeah.
Another game I wanted to mention, we've already alluded to it some, is that game against eventual national champion Miami in the fabled Orange Bowl that we lost 12-7 and so close to winning on that pass to the end zone on the final play. where we unfortunately had two receivers too close together and they collided. But talk a little bit about that, playing against a quarterback like Bernie Kosar and just a team like Miami and Howard Schnellenberger.
Well, they didn't cross the 50-yard line in the first half.
No.
The defense, I mean, you're talking about holding them to 12 points. It was 7-6 the first half, and Miami had not even crossed the 50-yard line.
Yep.
And, and if you ask their players, and I saw it in the papers, they said East Carolina was the toughest team they played that year. And they were several calls again and that were controversial. But I remember the biggest thing I remember is walking into the Miami Dolphins visitor dressing room and saying, I cannot believe we're here. And then Mike Grant and I, we'd always go out and help each other stretch and all that. And I think it was, I think we had snow or it was very cold in Greenville before we left. But it was like 84 degrees down there.
Yeah, you got off the plane. You got off the plane, man. You get out of that little jacket you had, palm trees all over the place. I'm like, golly, what a life, man.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, that game, I was, I'm the youngest of seven, and I had two brothers who played, two other brothers played in college. And like I said, my other brother, Mike, was at Cincinnati. And I went out there to do their spring golf outing at Cincinnati. And their defensive back coach, lo and behold, was one of the defensive backs that was on that Miami team.
Wow.
And we started talking. And in the first couple, it was me, my brother Mike, and his old roommate from college, and then his defensive back coach. And he says to me, he goes, did you play? And I was like, yeah, I played East Carolina. And he's, I was like, I was at Miami. I think we played against each other. And he says to me, he goes, your two guys ran into each other in that game. And I looked at him, and I said, yeah, and both of our guys beat your prevent defense deep. And that was the last conversation we had during that golf outing. He didn't talk to me the rest of
it. Yeah, yeah. Well, he knows they got away with one, man.
Oh, they definitely did. Now, that was both Norwood Van, Ricky, they both beat the prevent defense deep. And, that was, they were the eventual national champions. And, it was just little things. That was one of those little things.
Yeah. Well, I know that you guys put a fear in there. It was coach when they don't even have two-a-days now. When I was, my era was two-a-days. And so it's like one-a-days now. Pretty much.
Yeah.
So
one a day, and you can only have four consecutive days before they get a 2 or 3 day break or something.
It's crazy now.
Yeah, it's totally.
I wanted to ask you guys about one of the criticisms in the previous coach, and I'm not going to make it about that tonight. Other than I wanted to ask, as far as the practicing is concerned, you guys are old school. I'm probably the latter part of the old school, but in my opinion. Don't you think that that old term, you play like you practice, but I know there's always concern about injuries, but you can't dance around the idea of you've got to go full speed and good on good and all that. If you don't, then you're going to have the results that maybe we've had the last couple of years.
Football is football. I mean, you practice, how can you practice football without pads on?
Yeah. Well, Mike, what I had mentioned, too, when I was up there with the podcast is that, there's a difference between condition training and the kind of hitting training that you get. I mean, when you start hitting and you're hitting hard. I mean, you get your headaches. You have to get beyond that. So you can be in good conditioning shape, but you're not in good contact shape.
Right.
And if you're not in good contact shape, and it's a risk because it's a risk of getting hurt, and, you know, we've both gotten hurt, but you're not prepared for the kind of contact you're going to see in a game.
Right.
And you gotta be willing to run, as Coach Emery said, right through the goalpost without stopping. I mean, so, you know, you can't be tentative. And I feel like some of this, my opinion, some of the way they've tried to modify practices have, you know, although you might have great athletes, they may be tentative with regards to their aggressive hitting. And I'm not talking about, you know, targeting and all now. Of course, you know, back in the day, we were all taught to lead with the crown of our helmets when tackling. But you've got to have practice where you are practicing like you're going to be playing. And, you know, I was on the scout team more than these two guys, and they know it. And, you know, I took that seriously.
And Chuck, you know, so like you said too, I just want to cut you off. I just want to add something else to that. And if you don't believe that, come spring ball, doing spring ball, if you would see our in the red zone, 1-1 offense and defense, oh my God, that was like Saturday night, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was great. That was awesome, man. That's Ernest Binder talking trash. I'm talking trash back to him. That was awesome.
Oh yeah, I had to line up as inside linebacker on the scout team, looking at Terry Long through Terry Long to Ernest Biner. So you kind of know what I, you know, I probably had a few more concussions than I cared to.
Hey, yeah, short yardage. You had Terry. We'll have a Terry locking down, and then you had Reggie Branch coming, you looking you right in the face, benching 500
pounds. Oh, yeah.
He's benching 400 pounds. So.
Yeah, I just love to stick the head in there and get my chin busted open like I had a few times.
Yeah, Mike, didn't you, back when we were at East Carolina, you guys had in high school, going back to the whole thing of hitting, didn't you have, what was it, ass kicking day, or what was it where you could challenge someone in your high school?
That was kind of like
Bull in the Ring, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't Bull in the Ring. We had challenge day. Thursdays were challenge day. And Thursday in high school, we went out shorts and shoulder pads. But if you wanted to challenge the guy, the coach or the trainer, or I mean the equipment guy would go in and tell the guy, look, they want you to dress up full today. And then you're going out full with him. You're going to challenge him. If you kick his butt, you take his position.
I've never forgot when you said that. Mm-hmm. That is how East Carolina was. That there was.
Yeah, you practice the way you play.
You beat somebody up, you took their spot. That was just the way it was.
Yes,
we loved each other, but boy, if you could beat somebody up, you did.
Jerry, I was glad when they moved you to nose guard, man, because you're right on my ass, man. It wasn't you, it was the Reed boys or Tyrone. So when they move you to nose guard, well, that's one guy I ain't got to worry about.
Yeah, that was a casualty of my two broken hands.
Well, I would tell, you know, David, Kyle, and Bubba, all of this has done nothing but bond us players. I mean, we are pirate brothers. Forever, we love each other. It's the kind of thing that you just can't describe, but it what we went through, whether it's practice, games, conditioning, we are bonded for life. And here we are 35 years later. Hell, I'm 57, and I think Mike's probably 57. Jerry's probably 62.
58.
But anyway.
I'm 58.
I started college when I was six. Now five.
But, you know, that is what this kind of experience, that's what it's all about in the end.
And that's what we want to share with these new guys. Man, we don't want to come in and interfere with none of these coaches, let the coaches do their thing. But we just want to, maybe one game, you bring a guy in from the 83 team and talk to these players. Bring a guy in from the 90s, from the 90s team that played in the Peach Bowl. Bring that guy in and talk to these kids, man. You'd be surprised what kind of motivation that will give these kids.
Yeah, and I think Mike Houston's going to do some of that from what he
did. Yeah, I think Mike coached at the Citadel. I met him before down at the Citadel, so I'm real impressed with him. So,
you mentioned the 91 team, and that brings me up to a fun question. What would happen if you could take a magic wand and you could take the 83 team and they played the 91 team? What would happen?
Speed-wise, man, speed-wise, we'll run them under the table.
Yeah, we would have beat the shit out of them. And if they don't feel the same way, then shame on them.
Yeah. Speed. They haven't seen the speed that we had on both sides of the football. And special teams.
If these guys watch some of those old videos, they'll see. But what I always like to say, to be fair to both teams, is that 1991... no doubt had the best season in ECU history.
Right.
But 1983 had the best team in ECU history. That's my own personal opinion. That's the way I try to, you know, maybe a political thing to say.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, Chuck, it sounds like you're running for office.
No, I mean, I think you're pretty accurate.
Hey, who's
they had the best season. They won the Peach Bowl. I mean, they didn't play the same talent that we did.
Right.
We had
that's
the best team.
That's what I was going to ask the stat guy. Go back and look at the stats. Go back and look at how many rushing yards we gave up a game, how many passing yards, and the scores. Go back and look at that.
Yeah, I have to challenge some of these guys on Facebook from 1991. You know, it's a good debate, but it's all good. It was all a very both.
Yeah,
seasons were helpful for
man,
ECU
so.
Football, so it's all good.
That's good stuff, guys. That's good stuff.
Yeah, that's one of those fun conversations to have, and at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because we're all pirates. And
there you go. Yeah. There you go.
Love the brothers.
But it's certainly something fun to talk about. Hopefully, we'll have some teams here in the next several years that we'll be putting in that same category and comparing them to 83 and 91.
I live here in Charleston.
Amen.
Cedric Van Buren, so Cedric and I get into it every time we see one another. So my wife and I, just a quick story. My wife and I saw Cedric and Sam's about 2 years ago, right before Christmas. And we're sitting in Oregon. She says, "Really? She says, y'all still talking about this stuff?" I said, "Yeah, he stole the shit. We would have beat the winner. We're sitting in Oregon, man. I mean, we're sitting in there arguing."
Boy.
It's all good.
I'll tell you what.
I appreciate you guys from Sports Objective
I appreciate you guys doing this. And anytime I can help you, please let me know.
Yes,
we
sir. Absolutely.
Coming on with us.
Thank you so much.
Some of my best memories.
Some of my earliest memories of ECU football. I was born in 81, so.
Oh, wow.
Some of my earliest memories were growing up, my dad showing me that VHS of the 1983 highlight film. So I remember a lot of the names, of course, and having the opportunity to interact and meet you guys on a personal level, it's something that's very surreal. And I was telling Kyle earlier today, Mike, I know going back and watching that 83 film, I was just watching it a few days ago, and that lick that you laid on the guy from William & Mary.
The quarterback.
Right
on, the quarterback.
Right,
I couldn't believe
right on the sideline. That's actually a clip. We recorded that clip, when we produced this the podcast, when you go back and listen to it, it'll have that clip in there.
Okay. Yeah, I hope y'all have my greatest plays in there too. But I'm sure they have edited them out.
And for all everybody listening out there in podcast land, if you haven't had the chance to watch the documentary on the 83 theme, it's on YouTube, four parts. And also, something else is up there is the complete, somebody has recently posted the complete NC State East Carolina game from 83.
Yep. Andy Florida.
I did see that. That was the first, that was the largest crowd ever to witness at that time a college football game in North Carolina, and the first time a nationally televised game where East Carolina played in TBS. And I did find that, and I was really happy to be able to watch that again. Yeah, that was a good game. And as you saw, Kyle, and you, I know you kind of prodded me on that, and I was trying to think, you know, Ernest Biner, he did a great job scoring the go-ahead touchdown, but you saw that in the you know, last couple minutes of that, it was a defense that stopped NC State from scoring, which they were in, you know, a good position to do, but, you know, we denied them. So
right. We fumbled deep in our own territory, what, about the 10 or 15-yard line. And like you say, we stopped them on fourth and two or fourth and three.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, some of these things I have to go back to the old films because my memory is
Chuck, didn't the athletic department had to send those guys a check because we tore up, because some of the fans tore up some of the seats and stuff
like
a $30,000 check or something, man.
We didn't do as bad as they did a few years afterwards, where they
stopped
series for like 5 or 6 years. But
We need to get a picture of you guys for our promotional graphic for this podcast, with all of you doing the skull and crossbones or finger hook to send to Dave Dorn.
I was going to say, please do the skull and crossbones, but much as Dorn hates the finger hook, maybe y'all should do it.
Sounds like a plan.
It sounds good to me, whatever that means. We'll do whatever you guys want us to do.
Yeah.
We just appreciate you taking interest in the 1983 Pirates.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was great talking with you guys. Any other questions, any other thoughts?
No, I think, guys, we just appreciate y'all coming off with us, and it was good to hear you guys' stories and relive the 83 season, and we'll have part three here soon with some other guys, and thank y'all for coming on with us.
That's good. Let us know if any of the other teammates talk any BS about us, so we'll have to straighten them out.
Absolutely. We'll give you an opportunity to retaliate.
That's right. I appreciate that.
Hey, Bubba, Dave, and Kyle, thank you so much. You guys are the best. Man. And Mike and Chuck, great talking to you. And this is Jerry. I'm going to bed.
I'm talking
to you guys.
I love all you guys.
Yeah. All right, Pirates. Yep, love you too. Yeah. Thank you much.
You love you guys too. Pirates for life, man.
Pirates for life.
Go Pirates.
Yes, all right, good night, guys. Bye-bye.
Wow, what a great show, of course, with the 83 team, the second of several that we have, and what a great night, right, Bubba?
No doubt about it, Dave. I know Pirate Nation is going to really enjoy hearing from those guys. So appreciative of Mike Grant, Chuck Northcutt, and Jerry Rogers for spending over an hour of their time to relive that 1983 season. Some awesome memories, stories, behind-the-scenes perspective. And I know ECU fans are really going to enjoy hearing from those guys. Some other things we have on the docket as we move forward, our 83 roundtable will continue as we're still going to be catching up with several more members from that special season. We also have our AAF show where we'll talk to three individuals associated with that new league. These folks have ECU ties, so they're going to be involved with the Alliance of American Football that will be kicking off here on February 9th, I believe it is. And then we'll also have some excellent college baseball coverage. North Carolina and just this general region is just such a tremendous hotbed for college baseball. And we'll be talking to not only Cliff Godwin and ECU folks, but we'll be talking to several other coaches and college baseball analysts from ESPN and so forth as well.
And I know, Bubba, we've also got some ECU coaches that are coming for the spring sports, so we're working really hard as we can to get as many coaches on as possible from East Carolina. And, of course, that's kind of like our home base, if you will, and what we primarily cover. But we also try to cover sports in the, as you said, in the Carolinas and the region. And, of course, any of the big things that we have, we've been putting kind of local flavor like the AAF that's coming up, that we'll do that as well. As, by the way, folks, appreciate you so much for, we have so many people liking us, right, Bubba, on Facebook, and I know Twitter and all, and I know that they can reach out to us, right?
Yeah, and give us a follow and like on our Facebook page. We're approaching 500 in those categories there, and nearly 200 in the month of January, so a lot of people have liked and followed us there, and we really appreciate that. On Twitter, it's at the Sports OBJ, on Instagram at the Sports Objective, and subscribe to our YouTube channel as well.
All right, and write us a review. Make sure you do that too as well. Like on Apple, for example, give us 5 stars or wherever there's you listen to your favorite podcast that they have where you can review it. Please do so. That it never hurts for sure, and we'll be your friend. Well, until next time, and we'll meet you. We'll greet you. We'll put this podcast to bed. For Kyle from LaGrange Barber and Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.